This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After a long summer of anticipation and reruns, the fall television season has finally arrived. There are several new dramas about wealth, sex, and apathy, in no particular order, sitcoms about amnesia and local TV news and time travel, new reality shows to find the next great American band and Kid Nation, and a new documentary series from Ken Burns on the Second World War, plus the return of the Bionic Woman. What are you looking forward to this TV season or dreading? Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on, we'll talk about another pop culture phenomenon, what Los Angeles Times writer Greg Braxton calls the Black Best Friend. But first, the fall TV season, and we'll start with two TV critics, and we'll begin with Melanie McFarland of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, who's at the studios of KUOW, our member station in Seattle. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And most of us only know the new shows from the promos that we've seen for months now, like this one for the new Jimmy Smits series, Kane.
Sugar is the new oil. Billions of dollars.
For Alex Vega, the only thing more important than the family business.
You're going to work your way up in this business just like everybody else. Then you can marry Rebecca.
I love her, Dad.
Is the family.
The really great ones make the hard place look easy.
Okay, Dad.
And Melanie McFarland, the show can't be as bad as it sounds.
Oh, yes, it can.
Oh, I'm that's terrible.
It's... Mind you, it's not. I would not put it in the lower level of contenders for fall. There are far others. There are many others competing for that, including. Well, we'll probably talk about Veo Laughlin later.
Mm-hmm.
But what Kane at least has going for it is it has a cast that's almost entirely Latino. So that, you know, you can actually say that that's an improvement over most of TV. That in itself, it's actually fairly well written. It's just not that compelling. For something like this. What you want, you almost want something that's as over the top as Dynasty or Dallas, which is essentially what this is. But it's very muddled. This is a show that isn't quite sure what it wants to achieve, besides giving Jimmy Smits some really great lighting.
And, well, at least from the promos, it looks handsomely mounted.
Oh, definitely. And there's a lot to be, like I said, it is a fairly, the pilot was written fairly well. It was constructed well. And if you look at it, it's definitely interesting. But the thing about a pilot is, even if it's not a complete success, you want to come back for the next episode because it could improve over time. I think Kane has that potential. I'm just not sure that given what else is on, that people will want to make that leap. There is definitely an interesting mystery going on at the center of it all. And they're definitely trying to work a Sopranos kind of vibe.
Ah.
But I wonder if people are getting tired of that. There have been a number of primetime series that have tried to go to the space where Sopranos was in it, and none of them have made it.
Let's introduce our other critic now, Genia Belafonte of the New York Times. She's with us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you for having me.
And we're talking about the new fall TV season, and it used to be, you know, like the new car season, that all the cars came out in September. The new fall TV season, well, you know, we've been watching some series run over the summer, very good ones like The Closer and Saving Grace, and there's some series that don't even start until after the football season is over in the wintertime. Does the fall TV season still mean as much as it used to?
You know, I think it does. There's still a lot of excitement around television in the fall, and it still is the moment for obviously the networks to launch their series. And, you know, this season is particularly interesting because they're spillover from the summer. Damages and Mad Men are both really terrific and riveting shows. And Mad Men is so stylistically good-looking in addition to being smart and compelling and really carrying that that cliffhanger feeling week to week as Damages does. So I think people, you know, in the early part of the season, at least through October, will still be very committed to those series.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sense, and I was just reading some of the TV critics, a sense of the TV programmers just sort of, I guess if it was in a Jeopardy category this season, would be under potpourri. There's some new
exactly
scripted series.
Exactly, yes. They're
just floundering, looking for something.
Yes, there's the predictable mix of reality and the diminishing number of comedies, but there are some comedies. Back to You, with Kelsey Grammer, is, mm-hmm, of course the comedy around which there are the biggest expectations. These are two proven stars in comedy, and the feeling is, well, you know, if these guys can't make it work, perhaps the half hour sitcom as formulated, you know, by networks is a goner.
And then there's a lot of things that are, well, I guess quirky is probably the right description. Now, there's a new,
yes,
show called Chuck coming to NBC. It's about a tech geek who instantly absorbs government secrets.
I am not funny.
Is that your big secret, by the way? Because I've been sitting here trying to figure out what's wrong with you. And I was thinking either she's a cannibal or she's really not that funny. And I was pulling for cannibal because I'd never met one before.
Uh-huh. I'd never met a cannibal before either.
I think, yes, television is borrowing from film language, which is certainly found success and quirkiness with Wes Anderson and films like that. These television shows like Chuck are not quite like that, but we've also seen that kind of a show this summer on USA in Burn Notice, which is about a spy who's been fired essentially by the government and kind of scuffling, mm-hmm, and there's a lot of voiceover and humor. There's certainly a trend, probably having originated with Monk, of the humorous, you know, crime/detective show, the light detective show that really harks back to the 70s when we didn't take these things so seriously.
Mm. And speaking of quirky and speaking of comedies, Melanie McFarland, there's an unlikely comedy on the CW network, Aliens in America, about a Midwestern,
yes,
family where they adopt a young Pakistani Muslim as an exchange student. Let's listen to this excerpt.
For 1 year, we will be in the presence of a real live Pakistani who practices Muslimism. How does everyone else feel about Raja and his differences?
Well, I guess I feel angry because his people blew up the buildings in New York.
But that is not true.
Okay, Raja, in America, you have to wait until you're called on, and I'd appreciate a raised hand.
Now, who else is angry at Raja?
And Melanie McFarland, Clueless America.
Yes, but I think that what this show does is it doesn't make us look like a bunch of rubes necessarily. I think one of the things that it brings up, the best thing that it could possibly have done is make a parallel between the family, the sponsor family's kid who, so the reason it's called Aliens in America is because he just really thinks that he is really an outsider at his school. And here's this other outsider coming in. So, mm-hmm, there's a lot of parallels there. But more than that, I just kind of love the fact, Gina was talking earlier about Back to You getting a lot of attention. This is a show, Aliens in America, that lots of people who have already seen the pilot are very excited about. And the fact that it's on the CW almost allows it to have a certain amount of bravery that a show like Back to You wouldn't. So you're not going to see a whole lot of other series really going full throttle, talking about issues of race and assumption the way that this show does. And also Everybody Hates Chris, which is another CW comedy. But because it's on the CW, unfortunately, not a whole lot of people are going to watch it. So it may have to live on the grace of its merits before its rating.
But on the other hand, might it get a little longer time span to find an audience? The plug doesn't seem to get pulled quite as quickly on some of the cable networks.
Oh, well, the CW, that's the problem. The CW is actually a broadcast network.
Oh, yes, well.
Yeah, but yes, and that's the thing. A lot of people, for some reason, the WB and the CW merging seems to have escaped a lot of people. But on the other hand, I guess a lot of people were not watching those two.
So when they became one,
that's just another one network that a lot of people are not watching. However, yes, they do allow their comedies to breathe, and that's both a blessing and a curse if you've seen some of their other comedies. But yes, I think this show will have a lot of time to kind of find its footing and find an audience. And for a show like this, that's, you know, as smart as the pilot, is, that's a really good thing for viewers.
Let's see if we can get to some comments from our audience. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guests are Genia Belafonte of the New York Times and Melanie McFarland of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And let's go to Blair. Blair's with us from Utica, New York.
Yes, hi, Neil. I'm actually looking forward to the upcoming season of The Office on NBC. I think that it blends so perfectly, just the awkwardness of everyday life and work, and puts a little comedic twist on it that I really enjoy.
So you're looking for, well, this was, how long has this been running now? 2 years?
Oh, we're in, this is the start of season four coming up here, and I didn't really get into it until a friend of mine turned me on to it, and it was one of those shows where you have to watch a couple of episodes before you really start to understand the humor, but it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Genia Belafonte, we keep obviously focusing on the new shows, but this is the new season for a lot of old shows coming back, as well as like The Office.
Exactly. And we saw, you know, last night with the Emmys, Boston Legal, James Spader won for Best Actor. That series has been around for a long time and is certainly very, speaking of quirky, very quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something that's just forgotten because it does well and it's tried and true. That is coming back along with 30 Rock. Friday Night Lights, which was just so superb, just one of the best family dramas we've seen in such a long time, is going to return in the fall.
Winner of a campaign to save it.
Yes, winner of a campaign to save it, which, thanks to the internet, was very successful. You know, about 9 or 10 years ago, when My So-Called Life was taken off the air and fans were irate, there really wasn't that community. I think now, you know, now in the internet era, it absolutely could have been saved. But Friday Night Lights is something that I think will really, the excitement around the campaign to save it certainly turned a lot of people onto it on DVD. And I think it'll do very well this season.
Sadly, I'm old enough to remember when people saved Star Trek. Anyway, Blair, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And good viewing to you. We're talking with Genia Belafonte of the New York Times and Melanie McFarland of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer about the new television season. We'll have more on what shows are worth watching and which not to bother with in a moment. And the new CW show that takes takes on teen angst, religious differences, and culture classes. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's been a long summer, but we're talking about the new fall television season that kicks off this month and trying to help you figure out what's worth setting the DVR for. To help us out, we've called on two television critics, Genia Belafonte with the New York Times and Melanie McFarland from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. We also want to know what you're looking forward to this season or dreading. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's go to Gail. And Gail's calling us from San Antonio.
Yes, I am. Hi. I was calling about the Ken Burns documentary, The War.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to a group called Defend the Honor. And here in San Antonio, we have decided to boycott The War because the initial objections by the Latino community that included no Latinos have been pretty much skirted. The 18 minutes that they have decided to put between segments and before the credits, we considered that it amounts to token inclusion, and it's not full integration of the Latino stories of the United States.
Mm. Genia Belafonte, is this issue going to continue to dog Ken Burns, PBS, and The War?
I wasn't really aware that there was a controversy surrounding that aspect of the documentary. I was sort of disappointed initially on different grounds when I heard that he was doing this. I feel like there's just so much analysis, cinematic analysis, documentary and fictional of World War II. And there's really, I was surprised actually that Ken Burns didn't do World War I, about which so few of us know very much. It was a catastrophic war, and in many ways, you know, in some ways much more interesting. So I'm surprised, really, at the enterprise.
Melanie McFarland, I wonder if you had a view on that.
I completely disagree with that. Well, first of all, to address the questioner, yes, I have to agree. I've watched the documentary, all 14 and a half hours of it, and it really disappointed me that, as she said, there's actually almost half an hour of extra footage, but it's all slapped on the end, which is really... For Ken Burns, I was really surprised because this is a man who very carefully constructs his work so that it's almost like a poem. So it's you get to this end of this very moving poem and it's almost saying, oh, by the way, here's his verse. Let's put it on there. Hmm. But in terms of addressing the merits of looking at World War II, I think that what he does well is he actually breathes life and emotion into a subject, even though it's been worked over so many times. You're seeing it from the Pacific Theater standpoint, the European Theater, and also from the home front in one work. Also, World War II is a war that has been commodified quite a bit in modern culture. You have video games, Call of Duty and Medal of Honor.
Sure.
You have a lot of movies that still glorify it as this great war. And I think one thing that Burns does quite well with the war is that it reminds us that there were horrible losses and horrible sacrifices. And I think, yes, you can say, well, that's been done quite a bit, but not this well and not this poignantly.
Hmm. Well, Gail, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joining us now is David Guarasio, executive producer and creator of Aliens in America. We mentioned that a little earlier. It's a new show on the CW network. He joins us on the line from his office in California. Very nice of you to be with us today.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And we talked about this earlier. An American family adopts an exchange student from Pakistan?
Yes.
And it's a comedy?
It's a comedy.
How did you come up with the idea for this show?
You know, it's really my writing and producing partner, Moses Port, and I. It's always a very unexciting story. We're just sitting in our office, essentially trying to make each other laugh. We get paid to sort of invent TV shows, develop TV shows. And I think at that particular time, we were swapping stories about our nightmarish high school existence. And at the same time, you know, there was so much going on in the world. From a geopolitical standpoint, they were talking a lot about the war in Iraq and sort of the fear that's sort of out there right now. And we sort of, that's kind of was the, you know, what was going on in our office when we came up with the idea.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, was it easy to pitch?
You know, it was easy. And we sort of found people were fairly receptive to the idea because it's a little bit of a reflection on the state of comedy right now, is that people are willing to take some more chances than they were maybe 5 years ago, because it's just people have had a hard time finding an audience. So I think in our particular case, we told them as little as possible and sort of were entrusted to just sort of go write the script. And so that's the way we approached it.
Hmm. Is this a taboo subject? I mean, something that American producers and screenwriters have been afraid to touch?
You know, that's sort of a good question. I'm not really... Sure. I think there was a little bit of sensitivity. We originally pitched it to NBC, and I think there were some, and that's where the script was originally before it wound its way to the CW. It was passed on at NBC. I think sometimes people feel like it's maybe sort of a subject matter that's better left alone, particularly in a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for us, that's why it seems sort of ripe for the picking.
Mm-hmm. And interesting. Is comedy, do you think, more approachable in that sense, rather than trying to do it as a serious subject?
I think so. I think sort of that's why we've gotten such a nice response from the Muslim community here in Southern California, at least. We had a screening at the Islamic Center of Southern California, for example. It's because people just want to sort of take the subject matter and just relax a little bit,
mm-hmm.
laugh a little bit, and not take, you know... There can be huge differences between cultures, but when we're so serious about it at every juncture, it just sort of, I think it's a little overwhelming for people.
From the little bit I've read about it, Raja, the Pakistani exchange student, seems to be the sort of the moral center of this show, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that was, you know, partly because we also just wanted to do a show that was sort of, we wanted to hold up a mirror to the, in a satirical kind of way, to the American family right now. And we wanted to bring in a character who had a really strong relationship with God, had a real sense of himself, spiritually speaking. And obviously by choosing to make Raja Muslim, there were sort of opened up a whole other world of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. And just let me ask you, as somebody who produces and writes for television as opposed to just watches it, can you figure out what's going on? I mean, what the networks are trying to do this year?
No. You know, I've sort of had my head in the sand as to sort of what's coming out this fall, just because I've been...
Oh, sure. You've been busy.
Busy writing and producing this, and I sort of take it as sort of practice to sort of try and not see what everyone else is doing to some degree. So I'm not really sure. But I think generally speaking, you know, every year that goes by, the marketplace gets a little more fractured. And I think the result has been that, you know, one hand is trying to make things a little more generic and familiar and seems to be lowering the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And the other hand seems to be sort of reaching for something that's sort of unique and interesting. And what's sort of interesting about what we see television the past few years is that both things seem to be happening at the same time.
And I wonder, when you say fractured, when you write a show, you say, well, this is perfect for NBC, but CBS wouldn't like it. It skews too young.
Yeah, and actually our show ended up skewing too young for NBC as well, apparently, because since the two main protagonists were in high school, they felt like it was not going to be the right fit for them. I just mean that, you know, there's so many choices for people to be entertained.
Hmm.
And at the same time, with all the success, at least critically and commercially to a certain extent, that we sort of see on cable television, I think it's sort of forced the major network just kind of analyze how they want to go about developing programming.
Hmm. Well, David Guarasio, good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much.
David Guarasio, executive producer of Aliens in America, which debuts this season on the CW, which I've just learned is a broadcast network. Still with us are Genia Belafanti of the New York Times and Melanie McFarland of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And here's an email from Bill in Charlotte, North Carolina. Please ask your guest to talk a little bit more about the great new show on AMC called Mad Men.
Mm.
I'm not a big TV viewer, and this show has me on the couch waiting for it to come on. Where did this great show come from? Congratulations for all involved on this breath of fresh air. And I think, Melanie, that was you were talking about Mad Men.
Well, Genia had mentioned it.
Ah, yes.
Yes, this is one of my favorite shows. And I think it's also one of those shows when you're looking at what cable is doing and what networks should aspire to do, this should be an example of the freedom that cable gives producers to explore just atmosphere and good writing. And, you know, it's just wonderful. Mad Men, I think, also... as for what it comes from, let me address that. Matthew Weiner is one of the producers. He's the creator, and he was one of the producers on The Sopranos. So this is a pretty good next step for him, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Genia, why do you think Mad Men works so well?
I think the central character, Don Draper, is you know, this incredibly... handsome and very, very morally ambiguous character with whom your sympathies are with. He's extremely ambitious. He's, you know, juggling a marriage, a mistress, pursuing a client romantically. And there's this very there's this seductiveness to him. And I think a lot of what is appealing about Mad Men to middle-aged married people today is that it really speaks to this fantasy of separating your marital and your sexual life. You know, we live in a pretty monogamy-centric culture in a certain demographic, and this is really just, you know, the values of another time that do have a seductive quality, I think.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Jacob. Jacob with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes, the thing I'm actually looking forward to watching this winter is Jericho. I'm glad some of the fans and I were able to bring that back onto CBS, especially with the French government talking about more sanctions towards Iran if they do build.
About the ultimate risk of even a war with Iran. Jericho, by the way, for those who didn't get it last season when it started, is a film about a little community that's isolated by, well, nuclear explosions.
Sheriff? Chief?
Yeah.
Damage? Fires? Buildings?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. The town's fine.
Well, let's hope you're right.
What does that mean?
Do we have any Geiger counters?
Well, they're going to need them. Melanie McFarland, Jericho back for a second year. Also, Heroes back for a second year.
Right. Jericho was a big surprise, and it also is an example of what fans can do in terms of making their voice heard with bringing a show back. The thing that's going to be interesting about the second season, the producers told critics in July that the second season is going to be more of about what happens next once Jericho is back on the grid, once the government comes in, mm-hmm. reuniting all these towns that were at odds and actually at war. So, which is going to be a challenge, I think, because a lot of what drove the show in the past was that conflict and actually being off the grid and the desperation. So I'm a little bit skeptical about the second season. I'm glad to see it back. Heroes is another show that I really loved in its first season. The second season has the potential to become a little unwieldy because they're adding new cast members left and right. Mm. But it's also a show that kind of speaks to where we are today. And I think in a way, if you see any kind of trends in, with fall, one of the things that you might notice is that Reaper and Chuck and even Bionic Woman, these are all shows about normal people all of a sudden becoming extraordinary via superpowers or government implants or
whatever,
have you. And I think it, in terms of the way people are kind of feeling, it's this idea of being able to just be an average person, an average office worker, an average minimum wage big box employee, and all of a sudden being able to do something extraordinary with your life.
As opposed to maybe Jack Bauer, who's got, of course, the world's greatest cell phone battery.
Right. And Jack Bauer, he's kind of, you know, he's a hero who just does anything because he's told what to do and it's at any cost and by any means necessary. Whereas the great thing with Heroes was Hero. You had this guy who was in a very, you know, he was an office drone who dreamed of being this great hero. At the beginning of the season, you had a lot of the other people who were manifesting their powers who were very uncertain about it. He always loved it, and one of the things he loved was the idea of the heroic quest and striking out for good and all those things and rising above the fact that he's just, you know, being in his cubicle in this, you know, faceless office to actually saving the world and being a good person.
That's Melanie McFarland of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Also with us, Genia Belafanti of the New York Times. We're talking about the new fall television season. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get Tori on the line. Tori's calling us from Syracuse, New York.
Hello there, Neil.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. This is a good segue because I was going to just make a comment about Heroes, which is that I'm a middle-aged viewer who came into TV watching late, so I had a lot of catching up to do, and I really enjoy Heroes from the perspective of the idealism, but I'm really quite shocked at the violence, level of violence, and I wondered if other people felt the same way, the sawing off of people's heads and stuff like that. It's just really graphically difficult to watch, and viscerally and emotionally. And just wondered if any of your, if the two guests could comment on that.
And why don't we turn to you, Genia Belafanti?
Yeah, I think this has been increasingly an issue over the past few years, especially this past season of 24, which ended in May, was extraordinarily violent and bloody and difficult to watch in a way that, you know, some people obviously argue becomes cartoonish and thus, you know, not as impactful. I think that this is just something, you know, that network television is going to continue doing.
Well, Heroes was a show that took a lot of influence from comic books and
yes.
And so that a lot of the violence was seemingly, well, you would say cartoonish, but comic bookish, and not really meant to be taken seriously, but we're talking about the end of the world. It was a little confusing to me.
Well, certainly there have I don't know if you can necessarily call, for instance, in one of the final episodes, you had one of the heroes reaching into the back of a man's head and squishing his brain.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it from the perspective of the front of his face.
Much easier to film it that way.
Yes, but the effect was still there and the gore was still there, so I understand, definitely. At the same time, I would also say that it's not unique in this. A couple of years ago, many people were having the same complaint about Lost, which, as you'll remember in the premiere, had the pilot being sucked out of the plane and ripped to bits by a monster you never saw. Now, while you never saw the monster ripping him to bits, you did see his body flying down and hitting the window pane. So This is that cartoonish? Certainly not. But I think it is one of those things that's an undercurrent with both of those kinds of shows that are not quite sci-fi, more cinematic. And what the producers would argue, and they have argued, is that, well, these are both shows where the stakes are high and people do die. And I don't think that they want to soft sell that. At the same time, it kind of makes me raise an eyebrow when I hear people say that they watch Heroes with their children. Hmm. Because while kids do read comic books, I'm not sure I'd want to see my kid be watching heads being sawed open.
And they don't necessarily read those comic books. Anyway, right. Thanks very much for the call, Tori.
Thank you, Neil.
We'll have more with Genia Belafanti and Melanie McFarland after a short break. We'll also be talking about why African-American actresses find themselves typecast as the star's best friend but never get the lead. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're finishing up our preview of the fall TV season, the new shows, and the returning hits like Heroes and Grey's Anatomy. Our TV critics are the New York Times' Genia Belafanti and Melanie McFarland with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And here's an email from Dan in San Jose, California. Are we ever going to see the end of reality TV? And Genia Belafanti, well, I guess a lot of controversy over Kid Nation, which I think debuts, what, later this week?
It debuts, I believe, on Wednesday. And yes, there's controversy. This is a reality series in which children were sent out to build their own kind of pioneering community in New Mexico. And there are now allegations of child abuse surrounding what happened mm-hmm. when the kids were out there. Will we ever see an end to reality TV? Yeah, there's kind of, I think there's a saturation point for everything. Certainly, we don't seem anywhere close this season. Kid Nation is sort of the biggest or the biggest show. There are a lot more reality cooking shows. Coming down the pike again, Gordon Ramsay has his third or fourth show called Kitchen Nightmares, where he goes and tries to rescue restaurants that are, just having doing business disastrously. There are allegations there as well that scenes have been falsified. I don't know. There seems to be a great appetite for all this stuff, too, especially in the fashion and lifestyle and design realms.
Now let's get Anne on the phone. Anne is with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to comment on, just listening to you guys has kind of made me think about when you were talking about canceling shows earlier. I just wanted to say that I really miss Arrested Development. But
you're not alone.
But my main comment was actually on reality shows, and I'm really not a big reality fan, except for I loved the TV show The Amazing Race because I got to pretend like I could actually go on it someday and think about where would I go around the world. And I see it won Best Reality Series, like I think for the fourth time in a row.
Again, yeah.
But I think I don't think it's coming back, and I was wondering if you guys knew if it was going to, like maybe in the spring or some points or whatnot, because I know it wasn't very popular, but it was a really good show for a reality series, I thought.
For a reality series. Melanie McFarland, is The Amazing Race going to run again?
My understanding is it is. And yes, there. I want to comment on whether reality or will ever end. I'm sure that it will, but my guess is that as long as there is MTV and VH1 and cable, you will always have a reality show on the air somewhere. If you look at, I think the great thing, I'm going to agree with the caller, the great thing about The Amazing Race is it's smart reality. It really takes you around the globe, and it doesn't let you fantasize about taking, wild trips to continents that you'd otherwise never see.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've ever seen Project Runway. To me, that is definitely one of the more intelligent examples of reality competition,
Oh, you don't? Yeah, and that's one other comment I also wanted to say is I wait for the DVDs of Curb
right.
Enthusiasm and Weeds to come out.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Anne, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we promised that we would talk about Viva Laughlin before we left. It's a drama to first come around. It stars, Hugh Jackman.
You are unbelievable, baby. I mean, you got a huge debt.
You just lost an investor.
Absolutely no cash.
And there's also that dead body upstairs in your office.
Gina Belafonte and Melanie McFarland. Melanie, you were talking about this earlier. Is this going to be the first show canceled?
I never like to place my bets because Fox always surprises you. I would be very surprised if this lasted for more than a few episodes. This is just one of those concepts that was done very well on BBC, aired here on BBC America, because the producers knew that what they were doing was, frankly, absurd. But they did it so well, and they included the audience in on the joke, and that's why it lasted, and it was such a success, versus Viva Laughlin, where I think they're kind of afraid of the audience understanding that they're kind of they're joking around with this musical, so they're taking themselves a little too seriously. Plus, musicals just don't tend to do very well on television.
Now, Cop Rock comes to mind.
One.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
I wonder, Gina Belafonte, what do you think is the worst new show of the season?
I have to agree with Melanie on Kane. I know you guys were talking about that earlier. Viva Laughlin is just, you know, it'll probably won't make it past the pilot. It's just so ridiculous. But I just, I found Kane to be just pretty offensive, just from a plot point. There's a Jimmy Smits is married, is an adoptive son of in a family, and marries one of his, I guess, sisters, which just seems bizarre. And I think it plays into a lot of stereotypes, and it missed an opportunity to really to do something really interesting. The sugar industry is a, you know, has a pretty ugly history, and it just seems sort of dull and ugly at the same time.
Well, Gina Belafonte, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gina Belafonte, the TV critic of the New York Times, with us from our bureau in New York. Melanie McFarland joined us from KUOW, our member station in Seattle. She writes for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Thanks very much for your time as well.
Well, thank you.
And when we're going to come back, we're going to talk about, the BBF.